This is Senate Committee on Judiciary. It's June 7th, 1989, 1 p.m., Hearing Room 343. We have a work session on House Bill 2270, 2282A, 2357A, 2369, 2436A, 2456, 2518A, 3195A. Public hearing on House Bill 2250 and House Bill 2251A. Public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2588, 2593, 2739, 2822, 3146, 3355, and 3483.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Wheat Growers League. They have asked for your support of House Bill 2822. It has passed the House of Representatives. I believe there was no dissenting votes. It was referred to the Senate Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and it comes to you, I believe, because of the civil penalties provisions of the Hay and Gross Bill. Let me also say that we have met with the seed producers organizations, and they are in support of this legislation. They feel that there is a need for some legislation dealing with civil penalties, and the reason we say this is a couple of things have happened. More and more land, particularly in eastern Oregon, is going into the Conservation Reserve Program, a program by which a farmer can bid to set aside acreage and, frankly, be paid not to produce on that land. But in putting that highly erodible land aside, they must, in some form or another, they must put some sort of grass and have a conservation plan approved by the soil and water conservation districts in the federal government. The problem was, in a number of cases, seed has been mislabeled, and you had a case where, one, it was the wrong seed, or it was the seed was labeled to germinate at 98% when in fact it would germinate from 5 to 10%, and then obviously you have some problems if that is the case. Now, the reason we need the legislation, we believe, is because the department really does not have any authority today in dealing with this, and let me say that in our discussions with them, they do support the legislation. If the department finds that seed has been mislabeled, is not in accordance with the tests, the department, under the present statute, shall issue a written warning to that seed producer concerning the violation. If the licensee continues to violate these laws, then the department can suspend the license. By that time, it's too late. We think by having civil penalty provisions and, of course, allowing the individuals to go through the contested case at the state level and also for judicial review, that there will be a deterrent in the sense that there may be some fines eventually coming down that can deal with what appears to be an ongoing or ever-increasing problem. So that's why we support this legislation, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Other questions? This bill is here for us to do civil penalty language, and Catherine, you might want to comment on that. It comes to us as a referral from the Ag Committee, Senate Ag Committee. Catherine, Senator Grinsky?
I'd like to ask one quick question.
Sure, please.
While we were kind of all getting settled in here, I didn't catch the very first part. I didn't catch the very first part of your testimony, which is basically what kind of provisions that the Department of Agriculture has for seeds are we talking about these civil penalties applying to? That this poisoning seed thing?
No, it has really nothing to do with seed, poisoned seed. It's seed that usually is mislabeled in a couple of areas. One, it's labeled for a particular product or products, and it turns out to be that is not the product.
Okay.
And that can cost the grower, they may spend $50,000, $60,000 on seed, and they find out that it's the wrong kind of seed, or it doesn't germinate, and the label will say that it's going to germinate at 98% under a normal agricultural practice. And frankly, there's nothing in the statute that there's really a deterrent for these individuals.
Wouldn't there be the possibility of a lawsuit against the manufacturer or the distributor of the seeds?
There always is the possibility of a lawsuit. The concern you have there is that you've got to go to court. You've got to deal with it from that standpoint. You would hire an attorney. It would take a while for anything to occur. Their license is real important to them, but really all you can do, you can send them, the statute says first you've got to send them a letter. And by that time it's too late, and we think by having civil penalty provisions, you've got somewhat of a deterrent. And the seed producers in the state of Oregon agree that they need something like this to deal with some unscrupulous individuals.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Baker.
I see that you provide in the bill that each violation may be assumed deemed a separate and distinct offense. In the case of a continuing violation, each day's continuance may be deemed a separate and distinct offense. And each violation can subject the violator to a penalty of up to $2,500. So I'm wondering, in the most likely violations, are we running into multiple fines here or substantial risk of multiple fines? How does that work?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, it's hard for me to know exactly what would happen in the future.
But what are the violations? What's a typical violation? And is a typical violation one that would break apart into what they call distinct and separate offenses here?
You sold it to five customers? Is that what we're talking about here? Or five different farmers? Is that a different violation?
I think that would be the same violation, but if you continue to do it each day, then I think you have authority to increase the fine. We had talked about where that level should be. Frankly, a fine of $2,500 is not very much when somebody can make literally thousands of dollars. And so when the state says we can only fine you $2,500,
it
doesn't mean
that. I understand that. But there is a problem that if a civil penalty gets too high or could get too high, then you're crossing the line into actually having it a crime, notwithstanding you call it a civil violation.
I understand that, and I think also in terms of the department will write rules.
Yeah, I think that was the question.
The rules are
where you're going to find out what is a violation. As long as what we're doing here is setting maximum mm-hmm. limits,
right.
And it would be up to the Department of Agriculture and their rulemaking authority, which we have given them to deal with civil penalties, which would talk about the specifics of kinds of violations and what that would entail and what is the date. It's much like what we've given, I suppose, DEQ in that long run, in the sense of they have a different schedule for civil penalties depending on what kind of
I can't imagine
things they're talking about.
That every violation would be at the 2,500
No, I
level.
Anyway,
you ask a good question.
Fair amount of rulemaking authority.
And rulemaking would
on.
We would be involved in that, and I know the seed dealers would also be involved in that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? I need to hear from Catherine with respect to amendments, and then we're ready to move this bill.
Yes, Senator, this bill is adequate in terms of notice, hearing, and review. However, it does have some of the old language in line 26 upon the title, which we've taken out, so that the lien language needs to be corrected. And we can put the boilerplate into that.
Okay.
One other little question I see in line 9, it says each violation may be a separate and distinct offense. Shouldn't it say may be deemed a separate and distinct offense, the same way they speak of it in the next line? Each day's continuance may be deemed a separate and distinct offense. Seems like I always see that may be deemed language in these situations.
The drafters tell me never to use deemed, but
maybe
we should make it parallel. I can ask them and either put it up in the prior line or
okay.
take it out
of
whichever
line,
is
whichever
the
is
probably
proper
take it off
construction.
The bottom. My guess is it's some language didn't get cleaned up that
okay.
probably should be taken out. Can we then move the amendment on line 26 that Catherine has? We'll just get that fixed up with legislative counsel, and we'll also deal with the deemed in a conceptual way. Are there objections to the committee in doing that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Thank you very much.
Great. We have a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2822 as amended to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 2822 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll, please. Pat.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Brennan?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Shoemaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
All right, motion carried. Thank you. Is Representative Miller here yet? Somebody go to send for him. Okay, let's move to, is Bill Linden here yet? Is anyone here on 3146? Okay. The House Bill 3146 is the Ron Cease tobacco bill. It's one that we added in a request. I would ask people while we're getting assembled here that we will go to at least five today, and that's why we've added some things on the agenda to make accommodations for moving bills through as quickly as possible. So I'd ask folks in the audience to kind of, once we get through some of these bottom ones that members have suggested, we will start at the top of the list and work through so you have some sense of what you're doing. But Representative Cease is sponsoring and sent a note on this bill. So why don't you just go ahead, please, introduce yourselves for the record and tell us about House Bill 3146.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jim Carlson, representing the Oregon Medical Association. House Bill 3146 will essentially do four things. It will require all retailers who sell tobacco products to post a notice regarding what the law is on sales of tobacco products to minors. It will prohibit the sale of single cigarettes in less than a sealed package by retailers, and it will also prohibit the practice of distributing free tobacco products to minors under 18 years of age as part of a marketing strategy. The bill has been worked out on the House side to reach a compromise between the proponents and the tobacco industry representatives. It addresses the problem we have currently where we have easy availability to minors to purchase tobacco products at the retail level. And we feel it's a reasonable bill and a good compromise. And it establishes civil penalties against retailers who violate provisions of the bill.
Okay, and who is going to levy the civil penalties?
It'll be the State Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse.
Do they have that power now?
No, this bill will give them that
power.
Okay,
then I would like to look at someone else to do that. So we'll...
Madam Chair, the reason that the State Office of Alcohol and Drug Abuse...
Yeah, I want to stop you right now. There is no such thing in the statute that says the State Office of Alcohol and Abuse, and so that's where why it needs to be trained. We need to figure that out. We just had a bill that Legislative Council said I'm not sure that we can empower an agency that doesn't exist in statutes to give civil penalties, so we'll like to work with you and try to figure out where and whom ought to be the person.
Smoking police and DQ.
Well, I don't think they're probably the one. Maybe the health division or somebody who's in the process of doing, but we need to look at that.
Yeah, the reason they are in the bill currently is Jeffrey Kushner, who's the director of that office, under the Department of Human Resources, indicated a willingness to take on this added responsibility.
I know, but there's real problems with giving. We understand every agency has a willingness to take on civil penalty, and that's why we're snatching them here to find out.
Because I do believe the Department of Human Resources currently has that authority.
And especially when they, the person who levels the civil penalty, even in DQ, we don't have a go to their funds. So if you want it to go to drug and alcohol abuse, we're going to have to put the penalty someplace else and then have it transferred. It's not our... This is a major departure between what we do now in terms of people who issue civil penalties and then have it go to their own coffers, if you will. So that's just one little issue. Anything else?
Madam Chair, my name is Hank Crawford, and I represent the Tobacco Institute. I'm simply appearing before you to echo what Jim has said. and that we have come to an accommodation. We feel strongly that what we heard on the House side, that one of the main problems we had was the people that work in convenience stores not even understanding what the law is. It's our hope that this will help. I also would like to tell you that the industry has volunteered to publish materials and make signs to disperse into those institutions so that we can help educate the clerks as to what the law is. We have no objection and certainly wish to work with you as to whomever is going to give the civil penalties.
Right. Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Brockman.
What's the business about selling individual cigarettes in less than a pack? I mean, I see that all over the place, and it's a gigantic moneymaker because they make it. The markup on an individual cigarette is incredible. Yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator Brockman, it's a fairly common practice amongst a lot of the convenience stores to break open a pack of cigarettes and sell them individually for 50 cents a piece and that type of thing. You'll see that commonly at convenience stores located near schools and parks and all of that. And it's a cheaper way for minors to purchase tobacco products without having to purchase a full pack. And also the industry had some concerns on the fact that there's no warning label as required by federal regulations when you're selling individually.
Right.
Products tampering concerns also.
Okay.
Madam Chair, quite frankly, it's not probably a very encouraging health-wise to have the cigarettes out there with people fumbling through them before someone else buys them.
Anything else on House Bill 3146? Thank you very much, folks.
Thank you.
Is Randy Miller here?
He's working on that.
Bill Linden is here.
We're going to lighten up that plastic bill for you, Peter. We're trying to do it.
Easy way to dispose of.
Yeah.
33, is Heidi... Heidi Reichen is while we're waiting for Representative Miller, let's take House Bill 2270. And we have three people lined up, Bill Linden, Corey Streisinger, and Ross Shepard. So, Corey and Bill, why don't you come on forward? And
be careful, though.
You still don't think you have to worry about that.
Come on up, Ross.
I'm Ross Shepard. My name is on that list. If you'd be good enough to scratch it off.
Okay. Thank you. Our pleasure. We always... happy to accommodate
maybe
people.
We should ask if anyone else out there has something.
We're scratching off. Thank you, Corey.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, Governor Goldschmidt's legal counsel, and I'm here to speak on behalf of the -B4 amendments, which are being jointly presented by the Governor's Office and the Judicial Department. These relate to the issue of court consolidation, and what these amendments do is make the existing optional administrative consolidation mandatory, so that every judicial district would be required to administratively consolidate by the end of this year. It retains, however, the provisions in the existing administrative consolidation statute that preserve the jurisdiction of the circuit and district courts as separate. We believe these amendments promote the efficiency of operations that I believe you heard testimony on previously, while also responding to the concerns raised about the, in fact, differences between the caseloads of the two courts and, on occasion, between the skills and preferences of the judges selected to serve on those two courts.
Thank you. Bill?
Madam Chair, for the record, Bill Linden, State Court Administrator. The Judicial Department supports the -4 amendments and do believe that it will encourage further administrative efficiencies by consolidation. The only other comment I'd make is that we would like to see the original language of 2270 included because it does relate to another issue that is important on credit card use.
Madam Chair, we don't have any problem with that. It wasn't our intent to eliminate that.
Thank you. Are there questions? Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to come and speak to these amendments who hasn't had a chance to sign up? And I guess I'd invite folks to come, both of you, if you'd like. Thank you. Or neither.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Dewey, representing the Circuit Court Judges Association. We have seen the amendments, and we can support the amendments, the B4 amendments.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jack Kane, representing the District Court Judges Association. We likewise support the amendments to the court consolidation bill.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
I feel like this thing just dropped out of the sky or something, and I'm not really following you.
Grab them while you can.
Well, that's why I'm asking this question. So what exactly does this do? It maintains the jurisdiction of both courts. I heard that. Well, it sounds to me like that's not consolidation anymore, so maybe someone can explain
that to me. Let me take a stab at it. The previous legislation, the language was the Chief Justice may consolidate the courts. This changes that from may to shall, which mandates consolidation, administrative consolidation, in all of the judicial districts by the end of the year.
The operative word is the administrative. Consolidation.
The practical effect is going to be the same, though, right?
No, they don't think so.
No.
They don't think so.
What's
if it isn't, then why isn't it? That's what I want to know.
Jurisdiction.
So actually, Corey and Bill, you want to come up with Bill? Whoever can best answer that, how it's going to continue to work and stay there till we have any questions answered.
Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky. Right, one of the features of administrative consolidation, those courts that have done it, and it's a relatively small number in the multi-judge counties, is that there is a single presiding judge appointed who then administers both sides of the court in terms of judicial assignments. That's one major change that would happen if, in fact, we saw these amendments pass. In addition to that, we have courts that have not administratively consolidated, or they have done so in a limited fashion. And in those courts that have combined all the administrative and clerical functions, we know that we're getting things done more efficiently. There's no sense running, for example, two calendaring offices.
I understand that, but does this mean that circuit court cases can be transferred to district court and vice versa or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky, they can't be transferred. They'll still be filed in each separate court, but in a given county, you could have circuit judges doing some district court work and district judges doing some circuit court work. And in the counties that are administratively consolidated right now, that happens pretty regularly. That way, for example, we have five circuit cases ready for trial on a given day and three circuit judges available, and on the other hand, we've got two circuit district judges who don't have any cases assigned because they've settled or whatever, those district judges would be available to do the circuit cases and vice versa.
Let me just ask this. State court administrator likes it. Circuit and district court judges like it, right? Got that straight? All right. Thanks.
Questions? Senator Shoemaker.
He doesn't like it. What's changed fundamentally from the previous bill, other than the shall to the may or the may to the shall, which I wouldn't. What has brought the judges around?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, from the original amendments that were being proposed?
Yeah, from the original proposal, let's call it.
The original proposal would have required full administrative consolidation, just as this one does, but full judicial consolidation in 1991, and that would be full judicial consolidation means
no more distinction between the courts.
No more district court, all circuit courts, and all judges would be circuit judges.
So that part of it's gone then?
Correct.
I get it.
Any other questions from committee members? Thank you very much. Move to amendments.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move the House Bill 2270, B4 amendments.
And if you wouldn't mind, the Weber amendments dated June 7th, which bring back in the credit card.
Yes, so moved, Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Hill has moved the Weber amendments dated June 7, and the 2270-B4 amendments. Discussion. Are there objections? Paul, thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move
House Bill 2270.
2270 as amended to floor for due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Hill has moved House Bill 2270 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Schumaker?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
I want to thank everybody who worked together on this and who came. I think we've made some progress, and it's nice to be able to refer out this bill. Okay, Representative Miller, on House Bill 2739.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, and members of the Judiciary Committee. House Bill 2739 is perhaps not the measure of most importance to this legislative assembly, but it's perhaps one of the most important to certain members of my family. The bill got my attention, or the problem got my attention, when the adopted daughter of my sister decided to marry the adopted son of my brother. And if you look at the statutes, it's unclear as to whether or not that union is lawful. We think it is, but House Bill 2739 would take away any doubt. The conflict is in the adoption statutes, which say that when you're adopted, you're to be treated as the natural born for all purposes. The marriage statutes seem to say you can get married if you're not related by the whole or the half-blood. They aren't related by the whole or the half-blood, but they were both adopted, and if treated as natural born for all purposes, there could be a perceived problem. Some judges have issued opinions, informal opinions on this, as saying it wouldn't present them a problem, but again, this bill would take care of it.
Thank you. Other questions? Seems rather straightforward to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Randy, for coming.
Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 2739 for due pass.
Senator Brennan has moved House Bill 2739 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I'd just like to say it may not be the most significant piece, but it's one of the more interesting pieces we've had.
Some folks are very interested in genealogy, right, on your side? We've heard that, isn't that sort of one of the old Wills bill that failed in conference committee?
Yeah.
Senator Brzezinski's interested in genealogy issues.
We're going to recall that, though, we're not done yet.
Good. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Senator Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Schumaker?
Aye.
Aye, motion carried, thank you. Hetty Reichen was here, is she still here?
Just stepped out.
She at the hall, Representative Mannix, is Hetty there? Well, it's been, it's up, but let's see, who else? Representative Mannix, what are you, you're here on a work session on the corrections.
2436.
Right. Let's see, who else? Don't go away. Well, actually, let's take 20, we've had some people who, I know it's Jack's area again, but, well, wait, who, 33, do we have anyone signed up on 3355? Is that a sponsoring bill of the Seaton's Estate? It's one of the members' bills, I think. While we're waiting for Hetty, let's go ahead into a work session on House Bill 2357 and 2436. We have some amendments which I have given people an opportunity to come and talk about. I'm not sure how I feel about them when I read them over, so, but I have told people that they could have, you know, a few minutes to discuss them, since they said they didn't have it together on the House side, so let's go into these as a work session. Representative Mannix, you want to come forward, and Carly Davis, who's here? Carly Davis and Jim Trappi here.
And I'll pass out the amendments, Madam Chair.
Right. Representative Mannix.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Mannix, State Representative for District 32, which is Central and Northeast Salem. I'm aware of the what I'll call the Davis amendments, which propose that the temporary release bill and the parole bill be modified so that you simply prohibit a person from returning to the county of incarceration. I've discussed this with Elise Clausen from the Department of Corrections, and as the proponent of the bill and in having worked with corrections on this, their position is the same. We would oppose those amendments. The original bill was actually a Marion County bill in the sense that we just wanted to move people out of Marion County, but the bill was reworked so that it was a good parole bill, a good temporary release bill, a bill that the Board of Parole and the Department of Corrections felt would lead to some planning as to where inmates would go after their release. And these amendments would just, in effect, gut this bill and put us back to a self-serving Marion County bill, and that was not the deal that I made with the representatives from around the state who supported this bill. And so I have to honestly tell you that I'm not here just to help Marion County. I think that we need a balanced correction system, and I'm opposed to those amendments. Senator Shoemaker has put together some
planning to retire there, build a second, or build a home there, I should say. And as I say, in recent years, a gentleman has come in, bought the surrounding property, and has refused to let her cross the road, cross his property, to get any utility service at all in there. House Bill 3483 is a bill that will make a simple change in the Oregon statutes to allow the provision of utility services to any person that has demonstrated need but currently does not have utilities available. This law will help to eliminate situations where citizens are unable to legally develop their property for habitation. This bill has gone through the House Environment and Energy Committee. There was no opposition, passed out unanimously, also passed out of the House unanimously. It's a fairly short and simple bill, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kelly Ross, representing the Oregon Association of Realtors, and I'm simply here to tell you that our association has reviewed the bill and is very supportive of it, believing it to be fair and reasonable and logical for all property owners involved, that it does not add further encroachments to property because it assumes that an access easement already runs across subject property. And we believe that a right-of-way easement doesn't really mean anything unless there's the opportunity for utility service, because it no development would be possible without that. The way of necessity statutes directs that compensation be paid not only to affected property owners, but also to the county for costs of administering the procedure. So we'd urge your support.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
Did I hear you say that this would only operate, you'd get a way of necessity for utility services only if there were a right-of-way access? I don't see that in the bill.
Oh, perhaps I misstated that no, it's not that. I'm sorry, I misstated that.
Okay.
Are there other questions?
No, I just wanted to clear that up.
Right, yes.
It doesn't bother me.
It says what it does say. Why don't you introduce yourself for the record?
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Larry Harvey. I'm Representative Riken's legislative assistant. Mrs. Lavradere, she did want me to mention she was not able to be here today. She has not been in good health lately, but simply wanted to state that she was very concerned about being able to get utilities to her property. She appreciates you taking the time to hear this and hopes that she'll be feeling well enough after the bill is passed to be able to develop her property, which is where she plans to retire.
Thank you. Other questions?
Yeah,
thank
Madam
you very
Chair.
Much. Senator Brenneman.
Glad to see it over here again. I've had the bill in a couple of sessions here in the Senate, too, and I've had some difficulties getting it out, but it's one that helps not only Mrs. Lavradere, some other people kind of in the same situation here and there about the state, but that's probably the objection that Senator Shoemaker picked up on, I think, a little bit was from some areas. But
I guess
it's been a tough one, but yeah. One that's, I think, necessary.
I have a question. Does that mean that you could contend, commend, I mean, what about a road to get through other people's property? What about if a utility includes a road? It doesn't? A way, is that?
As we understand, Madam Chair and members of the committee, as we understand it, in this particular case, the way of necessity for roadway is already there. The utilities would then use that way of necessity for, utility companies would use that way of necessity to provide those. At the time that the way of necessity was granted, Mrs. Laverdier went through Lane County District Court. Unfortunately, and unbeknownst to Judge Fry, who sat and issued judgment on that, she was under the impression that it included utilities for way of necessity and would have signed the order that way. Unfortunately, later on, this loophole was discovered.
So we already have a way of necessity for other
That's
items?
Correct,
in her case, but there may be somebody else out there, I can't, who might not. And this, I guess, would provide access for utilities, even if you don't have a road access. I don't know quite.
The statute itself, as is described from what I can see in it, simply provides for a way of necessity for easement, for motor vehicle traffic. It doesn't state anything about utilities. This bill simply will add to the way of necessity under the ORS that it would also be inclusive of not only motor vehicle easement, but also utility easement, as long as the way of necessity is proven, the need is proven, I should say.
Well, I'm prolonging this perhaps, but the bill says way of necessity means a road to provide motor vehicle access or a route to provide utility service access from an existing service location to a point that would otherwise have no utility service access. So it's not a condition of getting the utility access way that you have a road access way.
Not as far as I know,
maybe
Senator Schumer.
In fact, it would always be the same, because if you have access by road, you could bring your utilities down the road normally. So maybe it would never happen that you'd have access by road, but not utilities, but at least theoretically it could.
Catherine?
That's right.
Okay, I'm just asking whether Catherine has any comments on this issue and whether we think we need to look it over to see if it's clear enough for amending an existing statute. So, Senator Shoemaker, do you want to visit a little bit about this more,
well,
bring it back? I mean, we're happy to. I think there's interest on the committee to move it. It's just a question of whether.
No, I have no problem with it. I think it's a good bill.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Grinsky.
I'd like to ask one quick question so I can understand this. Theoretically, the utilities could be coming from someplace other than where the road access is. Is there anything that would dictate where the, for example, the power lines would be run? I would hate to see someone be able to force power lines across someone's backyard simply because that's where the connector for the utility line was, although the roadway of necessity may be somewhere else.
Madam Chair, Senator Grinsky, on page 2 of the A and Gross bill, you'll notice that the line 4, there is an addition to the bill that is suggesting that the utilities, it should be conformed to the utility and policy standards that are established for the particular area, so that the bill doesn't dictate that the provision would be one way or the other. It would just be dependent upon what the standard policy is for the area that would be requiring power. In this particular case, they will be requiring underground service. This amendment was proposed by the Oregon Public Utilities Association.
Well, it isn't always going to be underground, though.
That's true.
That's an option. I mean, you don't have to do it that way.
Absolutely, sir. That's why the amendment suggested that whatever the requirements are, the policy is for the particular area in question, that the utilities would also be required, the utility company would be required to adhere to that same policy for the person requesting way of necessity, that there would be no exception made just for one case.
Well,
okay. Would you like to respond?
Madam Chair, Representative Grinsky, I might just say that the way of necessity process isn't an automatic thing. There's a hearings before the county government body, and Section 2 describes, you know, these are all considerations that have to be granted, and I think that if that was a factor, the one that you bring up, that that would come out in the hearing, and compensation could be directed to be paid, or else the petition for waive necessity denied.
But it's been in, like,
Your question answered then?
I guess as well as it can.
Right, I understand, there's no absolute on that, and there's nothing to do.
If you want to,
you know, I hate to screw around, but let's consider that.
Okay, well, we have, if you want a little bit to sort of work on, everybody's all nervous on the right-hand side here.
Madam Chair, what Senator Shoemaker was bringing up is on line 13 of page 1, kind of addresses the point that Senator Grinsky was talking about with the word "no utility service," and he was suggesting maybe to make it a little better bill might be practical utility service access, because you could have some situation where road in was available, but it wasn't practical to string the utility line all the way around there financially to get it in, and you'd want to come across, but I'm just saying I'd rather not.
Right, I agree with Senator Brennan on this.
Well, no, I left it with him because I didn't want to.
Mrs. Lavadura, I think, has a road and access
yes,
in now, but she didn't have the, in her case, the utility.
Any other comments? Any other questions? Thank
Let's
you for coming.
Bill.
Thank you very much.
Members.
Anyone else who is here to speak to House Bill 2483?
I'll move 3483A before we do pass.
Okay, Senator Brennan has moved House Bill 3483 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Unamended. Discussion. Call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
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 Aye. Does Grinsky vote?
Grinsky votes aye.
Okay. I don't mark until I hear it. Thank you. Okay, Catherine, we've 3355 is a request of Representative Calhoun. Margaret Carter, what bill are you here on?
Here. Really?
Okay, let's wait just a minute, Representative Carter, then. House Bill 2456, folks, if you'll turn to that one, it's Catherine has a work session we're trying to get.
Yeah, this bill was down on the floor. It was re-referred to add in conforming amendments. Another bill that was passed, 2273, has a conflict with this one.
This is the one that we took off the floor for Legislative Council purposes.
We're supposed to carry it, I think.
Right, we'll get it right back on for you quickly.
About that.
Oh, we're stepping.
Right.
We're not stepping. Oh, I see.
Well, yes, in a way.
Okay, Catherine. Well, excuse me, I'll let you get it. Let me get it on here.
This bill comes back to us so that it can be amended in case House Bill 2273 becomes law. And what it does is it takes the same section that is amended in this bill, which is also amended in 2273, and brings it into this bill.
Are there objections to the amendments? The chair would move them. Are there objections? Excuse me. I'll chair them. Move them. Chair moves the amendments to Senator Grinsky's bill, 2456.
You don't give me the blame for this thing.
Right. No objections.
Give it the wrong bar.
The bill is amended. And the chair will move House Bill 2456 to the floor with a due pass. Yes, as amended with a due pass recommendation. Catherine, you have anything else to say?
No, Senator.
Anyone else have any debate?
Has the state bar, the state section been heard from on this bill? I mean, I think it's probably a good bill.
What?
24? Or am I looking at the wrong bill? I was 24. Pardon me.
56.
No, see, this one already.
Oh, I thought we were on 355 introduced by Calhoun.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Mixed folders here.
This brings it back in again.
This bill?
Yes.
Confident real estate.
We didn't get Calhoun, so we didn't move on that one, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I lost track of that.
My fault.
Pardon me.
Sometimes they move quicker than we...
Often the hand is quicker than the eye.
Right.
What are we talking about? Okay, I'll go along the program.
Okay. The motion before us is House Bill 2456 as amended, and it's one, as we say, they are purely conforming amendments that have been requested by Legislative Council. This committee has passed the bill out before it once. Okay, call the roll, please, Pat.
Aye.
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 Aye, motion carries, thank you.
There we go.
Let's deal with House Bill 3195 in a work session.
Calhoun just showed up, I don't know.
Oh, is, oh, okay, Representative Calhoun, I...
Right here.
Sorry, come on up then. Let's take House Bill 3355. Relating to small estates, it raises the level.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm out of the House Judiciary Committee, and we're busy over there. This is a, members of the committee, for the record, my name is State Representative Ernie Calhoun from District 50 of Medford. This is a bill that came to myself at the request of an individual who is the first female practicing attorney in the city of Medford, by the name of Jeanette Marshall, and although I canvassed by Jeanette's house three times during my campaign, I didn't get her vote because she's one of the most staunch members of the GOP. I'll probably never get her vote, but she's got a good idea here, I think, and was happy to try to shepherd it through the process for her. Basically, the problem that we're trying to address is that the small states, I don't practice in this area, I'm a criminal lawyer, so this isn't the most familiar area for me, but there's a small estates act in Oregon that allows estates that are for, that amount to less than certain amounts to avoid probate and be handled through affidavit. And some of the attorneys on the panel that maybe deal in this area will have a better idea of or understanding of this than I do. The reason for that is to try to make it easier for people to dispose of their estates after their death and for the family to be able to get the money and go on with their lives, quite obviously. What we did, if I recall, in the House side in terms of amendments to House Bill 3355 was to change the amount for the fair market value of real property to, I think, the first amount was $25,000, and the second amount that we used was, I believe, $60,000. Does anyone have a copy of the A. Gross bill? I was just notified of this about 5 minutes ago, so I haven't even...
Get it to you.
So the intent of what we were doing was to take these amounts that I believe haven't been raised since 1979 and basically give them appropriate increases to attempt to allow people in the present day world with the present day values to be able to enter into the small estate system to dispose of their property. The $60,000 amount is basically indicating that the person has a modest home. The $25,000 amount dealing with their real prop or with their personal property, which is typically bank accounts, says that they've got basically a modest bank account and they can fit under the Small Estates Act for it to be easier for them to dispose of their estates. Previously the amount was $35,000. There aren't many homes which are valued less than $35,000 that anybody's going to be living in most circumstances. And the $15,000 was somewhat modest. The original draft of the bill would have made the real property and personal property exactly the same in terms of their amount, so that each would have been $50,000, I think, with a total amount of $100,000. That wasn't a very good idea because the danger in the Small Estates Act is in, not so much in the real property, because it's difficult to dispose of that, but in the personal property in the bank account. So we wanted to maintain the consistency with what had been done previously in the past and get the amount for the real property up to $60,000 so you can dispose of your homes, but still keep a smaller amount on the personal property for bank accounts, so we left that one at $25,000. So this basically would say up to $60,000 in real property, up to $25,000 in personal property, up to $85,000 total, and you're allowed to get into the Small Estates Act. The only other thing that we did with a different bill that would affect this in the civil sub of the House Judiciary Committee is affecting the $60,000 amount. Now, until recently, apparently the amount that we'd be looking at on that $60,000 had to do with how much equity the person had in the property. But because of the other legislation we passed dealing with estates, that amount has to do now with the total value of the real property. So it, to maintain consistency and what have you, it's very appropriate to raise that amount quite substantially. That's what the bill is all about. I know that I'm a little disappointed Senator Grensky isn't here, because this is a bill that I know he's been had brought to his attention by Ms. Marshall also. And hopefully he could also be a proponent for it, and I think he's got some experience practicing in this area. But I think it's a good little bill. It kind of keeps us up with inflation and allows people to use the Small Estates Act. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Great. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
The state bar is ordinarily fairly active in this area, and I think they're the ones who brought the present Small Estates Law through the legislature several years ago. They probably also conferred with the probate judges in doing that. I'm wondering whether you've heard from those groups in this bill, and do you have their support?
We had an individual, Mr. Mendoza, I think his name was, that came to testify. We had all our bills scheduled for the same day, and one of those bills was the other one I was referring to that was at the request of the Oregon State Bar. I believe his name was Mr. Mendoza. He was concerned particularly about the...
Without getting into the details of what his concern was, did he speak for the bar or for a committee of the bar?
He'd initially spoken against the bill when it was in its original form and said that the amount on the personal property section of the bill was too high. So the committee acted to...
But was he speaking for himself, or was he speaking as a representative of a bar group?
I don't think he had an official position from the bar group. I think he was speaking for himself. But as near as we could tell from the committee, he was a fairly astute representative of the bar group when he brought those concerns to us. Once we satisfied those concerns, his objections have not, and the bar has not objected to this bill since that time. But their major concern was on the personal property aspect. If you get that too high, that could be a big bank account, and that money is very easy to... it'll disappear easily as opposed to real property.
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't need to hear. I just wondered if you'd heard from those things.
I have asked Catherine to call Warren Darris, who's the sponsor of the whole rewrite of the Small States Act, and Catherine might respond.
He said originally the probate section had taken a position in opposition to the bill. It had been amended in the House, and while the whole probate section had not come back and taken another position, Warren didn't believe the way it's been amended that there would be problems with it, that it's simply basically a consumer price index adjustment, and it hadn't been adjusted in some time.
Catherine did check it out at our direction, so at least for what that's worth, it's only one person.
Say that without having checked it around pretty carefully.
Certainly he's been very active in rewriting the whole bill, so. Any other problems? Any other questions? Sure.
Madam Chair, I'll move 3355A to the floor to pass.
Okay, Senator Brennerman is moving House Bill 3355 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Further discussion. Call the roll, please.
Aye.
Brockman.
Aye.
Grensky.
Aye.
Hill.
Aye.
Schumacher.
Aye.
Bringer. Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you very much.
Members, Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee.
Okay, let's take House Bill 2593. This is a, we should send for Representative Jones. but Mr. Cooney has signed up. This is a Jenny Jones bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Cooney. I'm a privately practicing attorney in Portland and represent the Oregon Medical Association. We drafted this bill for the society to try and equalize the hospital lien law. The current law allows a hospital who treats an accident victim to file a lien against the insurance proceeds of the person who may be the ultimately responsible tortfeasor. In smaller communities, and I'm thinking particularly of Bend, the St. Charles Hospital, where we do have a lot of highway accidents, frequently people from out of the state or city are injured, brought to the hospital. Under the bylaws of most hospitals, physicians are required as a condition of staff membership to treat people that come into the emergency room under those circumstances, and the hospital lien frequently eats up the entire amount of any insurance funds for payment, and the physician who treats in the hospital is left without any compensation at all. What this bill does is just amend the existing hospital lien law that would allow a doctor who treats under those circumstances, when the hospital gets a lien, that the doctor likewise would have a lien on any insurance proceeds that might be available to pay for it. If there is not enough insurance to go around between the hospital and the physicians, then the bill requires proration of the amount of money according to the size of the respective bills. I think it's a bill that is fundamentally fair, and urge your consideration of passing it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hill.
So the hospitals have a lien and the doctors don't, is that the current?
Yes. Yes, sir.
And the hospitals are willing to share in a sense? And
well, I don't know how excited they are about it, but I don't see a member of the, if there's anybody from the hospital association here. What we tried to do in Bend, where this has become more and more a problem, the hospital recognized the unfairness of the situation, and so we worked with them on the possibility of them sharing their portion of the lien with the doctor. But many of your hospitals are financed with have large mortgages, and lending agencies have liens on their accounts receivable, and so they were prohibited from passing and sharing the money that would be available. And so it's important that those who do come in the middle of the night to treat these folks, that if it's possible, to try and share as equally as we can the funds that are available.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Jones basically asked us to draft the bill for him because he had two instances in his district where a specific physician was in fact left without any compensation at all, and he just felt that that was unfair in the process, and so this bill tries to correct that.
Thank you. Senator Brenneman.
How would you feel about a friendly amendment allowing the repossession of eyeglasses?
Do you recycle those? You've been on the Ag Committee too long, Brenneman. Recycling, do you use these over again?
Huh?
If you get them back from a patient, do you use it? Do you resell them to me?
No, but it sometimes make you feel better.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
You get paid before you even give them a prescription. What are you talking about?
That's only the exam.
Catherine's out sort of visiting for a moment, sent her on an errand. I wanted to see whether she has any. We don't have to move this bill today if you'd like to spend some time. I assume that's okay. Catherine, technically this bill is in okay shape?
Yes, Senator.
Yes, Senator.
Do you have any questions?
No.
Okay. We're ready for motion.
Okay. I'll move House Bill 2593A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Brenneman is moving House Bill 2593 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Madam Chair? I wish to disclose a conflict on this in that I am the attorney for the Multnomah County Medical Society, which presumably would benefit from this bill.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brenneman.
Aye.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Grumsky.
Aye.
Senator Hill.
Aye.
Senator Springer. Chair Cullen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay, we've had people who requested to take up the two, at least two major folks who are here on the seatbelt bill, and then we have three other bills which belong to Jack, and have a lot of people signed up. This committee is scheduled to go till, there's Representative Calori. Come on up. Let me visit a little bit for the audience. Yes, we've been accommodating legislators most of the time. House Bill, we'll take at least some of the parties who have to leave on House Bill 2588 before we get into the stop bill and the other, and we've alerted the folks in the audience who were interested in that. And then we'll move into those two bills as soon as we finish. So we are now at 2518, a work session on the computer crime bill.
There are amendments, Madam Chair, and I'll hand those out. You should have in your file from the hearing the -4 amendments offered by Representative Calori. I will pass out the -5, which is an additional amendment from U.S. West and Representative Calori.
Okay. Why don't you go ahead and address yourself to that? I know that Senator Shoemaker's had concerns along the way as well.
Yeah. First of all, I'm State Representative Ted Calori. I have with me Gary Wilhelms from U.S. West and Jay Frazier, a counsel with U.S. West. The issues that were brought up, astutely so I might say, by this committee last time, related to a number of things. One of them had to do with asking us, Senator Hill asked us to check on those other states that I talked about that we used as a model and see whether or not they use a similar type scheme in having some crimes as